Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast with me, Susie Perry, and this one...
Jason Bradbury, nice to see you all.
Now, apparently, on all of our podcasts so far, we've taken a little bit too long to get to the point where we're telling you what the podcast is actually about. As if we kind of go off on some sort of riff or tangent.
Sometimes we might spend a moment talking about, you know, I don't know, my nan or something like
that. Yeah. Oh, I'm still laughing about Nana Wyatt.
You know,
in
bless
Columbia.
Her. Yeah, with a built-up shoe.
I know, going round in circles.
Oh, bless her.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we get to the point?
I think we sort of did that then, didn't we? Maybe what they're referring to. We should perhaps move on.
Anyway, we're going to be chatting to the lovely, lovely man sitting opposite us right now and discovering what tech has floated the Bentley boat this week. All aboard, ladies
great.
And gents.
Mm. Mr. John Bentley Esquire is back in the podcast studio. Hi, Johnny boy. Mm. What gadgety treats have you got for us in your... succulent briefcase.
Ooh. Well, I've got Canon's latest dual fisheye lens designed for their mirrorless cameras, especially to make augmented reality content for headsets.
I've seen that talked about, but I don't really understand it. You've actually got it with you?
Yes, I've got several of them, in fact, and including the new one and a prototype. Yeah.
What else have you got?
I've also got a light bulb, which is the first light bulb I've ever tried that's better than daylight.
A light bulb. Okay, well, that's probably got our listeners sliding off their seats, John. If light bulbs aren't enough for you, Jason and I will be testing the latest Panasonic Sound Slayer. Half speaker, half necklace.
Yeah, just to give you an image, it's a bit like those weighted things that you put around your shoulders in the hairdressers to stop the hair going down your collar.
Yeah, but how do you know about that?
But this time it's musical. I used to have hair once back in the 80s.
Did you? Was it long hair?
Flock of Seagulls style.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, boofed up with some
V
gel.
In a V-shape.
Yeah, wet look gel.
Do you think we might be...
doing that tangent thing
drifting
again.
Drifting off there a little bit, yeah. Okay. Shall we proceed to the show?
Let's do it.
Right, we're going to start with comments and questions.
Yeah, we've got a very active comment section, haven't we, on this show?
Yeah, we have. We love it. So Peter Whitney on Facebook, he said, I've just watched the Otis episode. Hilarious. The best one so far. Well, John might have something to say about that. I've got a velvetizer based on Otis's review. Amazing.
Oh, that's brilliant.
That's good, yeah.
Mr. Deco from Instagram said, would you take the podcast on tour? Well, you never know. If things go well, I'm sure that we could...
Like a mini gadget show live,
yeah, it'd be great, wouldn't it? And maybe have some kind of camper van style thing, a tech van.
That'd be good.
It'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yes, actually, yes.
Be like a kind of John's briefcase on wheels.
And we could definitely bring John with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm. Peter Jones.
Yes.
Now, not the tall one off...
Dragon's Den.
No, sadly. I've always had a bit of a thing about him.
Yeah.
Said that out loud, didn't
is that
I?
Is that anything to do with the fact that he's a multimillionaire?
No, it's not. It's just that he's a lovely man and I fancy him. Any update on Jackson's progress in the Fortnite World Champs?
Okay, so this refers to my son and an episode we did about him being an esports player going in, hopefully into the World Championships. So as we record this, it's very timely because I think it's sort of the final opportunity to win a place in the World Championships is tomorrow. Yeah, so maybe I'll just put on the social media how he does, the FNCS. Yeah.
And we can
Fortnite
put it
World
on the Gadget Show socials as
but
well.
But all I can say is he's been practicing every day since that episode.
Of course he has, he's so diligent.
Yeah.
And finally, Chalky on YouTube has the most important question. He said, can Jason still do the worm?
Oh, as in the breakdance move?
Yeah, so this harks back to a challenge that we did years ago about how to make a video go viral. And yours was called
Extreme Caterpillar Breakdance.
And it did go viral.
God, it went massive, didn't
it? And obviously the worm was the kind of, I'm doing this with my hand, which is like a sort of...
wormy
worm
type thing.
Movement, which you did with your body.
Yeah.
I wonder if you can still even do that now.
I reckon I probably could. I'm not going to do it for you today, if that's what you're asking. I would do it, but I've got a sprained ankle. So I think it wouldn't be a very good idea. But the answer, Chalky, is absolutely 100%. I still break dance. I love it. Maybe not with quite the finesse that I did back in the day.
Do you remember, John, on Gadget Show Live, that we kind of goaded him into doing it because it'd been so successful with the 10 million views. And we were amazed by what happened, actually.
Yeah,
it was
incredible.
A fantastic challenge. And you went, yeah, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. You jumped down and you broke your glasses and they were the only ones that you bought the whole week.
I bent them at glasses.
You had them all like with sellotape on for the whole week, didn't you?
Yeah.
Classy.
Anything for the audience, Susie. You know that.
Yeah.
And talking of doing anything for the audience.
Oh, no, don't. Let's not go down
in the
my
same
route.
In the same episode, you did the same viral video challenge and you made this great video, which was like a kind of... Well, it was like...
It was a bit carry on, wasn't it?
It was a bit carry on. So you were changing as I remember it, I'm doing this from memory, in the background, and John kept moving things around the studio that just happened to cover you up.
Exactly that. So it looked like I had no clothes on.
But actually, John was always covering you by moving gadgets around, and it was very well shot, but very, very brilliantly orchestrated, wasn't it, John?
It was, actually. And it did myself, yes.
Hugely well. It was also hugely popular on YouTube, but maybe for the reasons that it wasn't intended. No. Namely, I seem to remember that one viewer spotted... In a sort of forensic way, in a reflection of another reflection at the right angle, you can actually see Susie with no clothes on.
Mm. Well, with no top on. I mean, everybody had been so diligent and everyone was being really lovely about it. John was actually the only person that could see anything.
Yeah.
So John has seen my boobs. It's fine. I'm all right with it. But I didn't know it was going out on TV in the reflection of John's desk.
Is that what it was?
That is actually what happened.
Reflections often catch you out on these sort of things, or catch people out, it seems, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant. But both videos did really, really well. And it was very interesting because it was at a time when YouTube was really in its infancy. It was maybe 1 or 2 years old. Yeah. And so getting, you know, huge amounts of views on videos then was a really big deal. No, it was great.
I've got a comment as well. It was on YouTube. It's a Master G Official, and it's really rather complimentary. I thought I'd read it out. It says, few presenters have competence and technical ability to review gadgets authentically and in a way that advanced and novice consumers can understand and gain valuable insight. Congratulations, Susie and Jason. Oh. You'll soon have people queuing at the door and wanting their products featured and reviewed.
Oh, that's Master lovely. G
Official. I was expecting at the end of that for it to go, and Jason and Susie, you can't do it either. Thank you.
We love the comments. Keep them coming in. It's a really huge part of putting the show together. Thanks very much.
Right. So moving on, John, most of the tech we're discussing this week is down to you and what you have in your marvellous briefcase of Gadge.
Yes. And as an esteemed guest and senior member of the Gadget Show family, you're actually straddling two sections of the show, John. Ooh. You see, we always start with a headline gadget and then the guest comes in after that. But you, sir, are both our headline and our guest.
How marvellous. I'm really honoured.
So the first thing that you pull out of your briefcase has got to be good. No pressure, because that's the headliner.
Yeah, better be good, Johnny boy.
Well, I've got so much stuff here, I actually had to bring a Pelly case.
Blimey.
Oh, this is already a headliner, isn't it?
Look, here it is. And what I've got
it's
in here...
It's a well-used Pelly case.
Is it is at well, it's always good to have a Pelly case in one's armory, I think, of cases, and
straight out with it.
And in this case, I have Canon's latest dual fisheye lens, because there's a bit of history to this. They're actually at the time of recording launched this week, in fact, which is jolly good, and Canon are trying to get into the VR headset content creation market by making it easy and straightforward to create sort of high quality, 180 degree, fairly immersive content that you can put into a headset without having multiple cameras and stuff like that.
So let's have a look. There. Anyway, so they're trying to create a 3D experience.
Yes.
Right.
Through headsets like the Vision Pro and Meta Quest 3 and so on. But they actually started their mission to do this a few years ago with a full frame dual fisheye lens for their... full-frame mirrorless cameras, including this very much video EOS R5C.
Can we just describe what this looks like, James?
Yes. Well, it looks like, and I'm being serious, like a pig snout. It's like two lenses side by side, which you wouldn't normally expect on what looks like a DSLR camera, doesn't it?
Yeah, or mirrorless one, obviously, in this case.
Yeah. And as you look at it, there's two lenses looking at you, which obviously give you that 3D footage, correct?
Yes. And this was the original one for full-frame cameras. It's quite large.
It's been out
quite
for a while, this one.
Quite large, quite heavy, quite expensive.
Yeah. So this came out about 5 years ago?
Yes.
Mm. Right.
But this week, as we were recording this, they launched another one for their smaller APS-C sensor cameras.
Smaller sensor.
Initially for the R7. And this is the smaller one here.
Oh, it's much more neat. Same thing, isn't it, Susie?
Yeah, so it looks very similar, although lens is tiny bit smaller.
It's got a smaller aperture. It's f3.5 as opposed to f2.8. The lenses are still the same distance apart, which is to sort of mimic eyesight. It's a 6 centimetre separation.
So you're getting a 180 degree kind of view
Interesting. Yes, on the original one, the full frame, you get, I think the field view is technically 190 degrees, which goes down to 180 degrees. With the new smaller lens, you get a slightly smaller field, narrower field view, 140 approximately.
This reminds me of a phrase that I was mercilessly taking the mickey out of for saying, which is when 3D TVs... were all the rage way back in the day on the Gadget Show. I remember doing a link to camera saying 3D is here and it's here to stay. Well, and I was right. But yes, I told you. I was just ahead of my time.
Just the headset hadn't come out yet instead of the telly.
Thank you, John, for saving me. So the idea is that you would... the bottom line is this. I'm a big user of VR, as you know. We've covered VR, haven't we? We started with the Vision Pro on this podcast, episode one, which is brilliant. And obviously they've got what they call spatial video, haven't they? Which is a sort of, I'd say a less immersive version of what I'm guessing this offers, but you can do it with your iPhone. My guess here is that you can shoot something that would be more of a standard 3D movie experience,
yes,
but yourself. So you're able to content create, they're giving it to the masses, they're crowdsourcing content for the coming VR explosion. Is that the idea?
Yes, I think that is the idea.
And John, we've on this podcast, and we've talked about Insta360, the X4 that's come out, which obviously films 8K, and you don't have to frame anything, you zoom in. So in terms of quality, how would you compare the two?
I'd want to do a direct comparison, but I'm guessing with a bigger sensor, though, this should be better.
I recorded that interaction between you two, so we might, I don't know if we can play that back, but if we can, for those of you watching this podcast, you'll be able to see what the effect is like.
Do these work in the same way that our eyes work?
Yes, they do. Essentially, they take a slightly different perspective on what you're seeing and combine it together. Although they record the images separately on the sensor, though. And this one, the new one, has autofocus, but it's only a single step autofocus. It's not continuous as yet.
It's interesting because it feels like the first faltering steps are being made to crowdsourcing content for, you know, the VR space.
Yes.
And how big is this market, and how important do you think it was for Canon to kind of take this step?
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of comments around that it is very much a niche product, and should they be putting their development resources somewhere else, perhaps? But on the other hand, the counter to that is that certainly Apple are throwing a lot of weight behind it.
It's a growing market, isn't it?
And Canon, I suppose, want to try and own a bit of that if it really does take off, like Apple are predicting. I mean, Apple are working with them, and I noticed at WWDC they had that camera there quite a lot in there, and then they also had the... prototype one, which is coming up, which is a smaller version of that with two little lenses
in here.
Oh my God,
you've got a third one.
This is only a prototype, so it's not a functioning one at the moment, but that...
So this looks very different.
Who carries around a Canon prototype in their Pelly case?
That's the 7.6mm RFS F4.
So just describe that one for us.
Well, so this is... I mean, it's clearly the evolution of this technology series, because it's got a standard-looking lens screwed into the body of the camera, but when you actually look down the barrel of the lens, rather than seeing just a single circle, there are two.
You're seeing double.
There are two, you're seeing double, spaced, I'm guessing, at a similar distance in terms of ratio.
But very neatly designed.
Yes.
You know, on first kind of glance, isn't it?
It's very, very interesting. They must know something that we don't.
Because this looks, to be honest, the other two, the precursor to the prototype you've got here, they do look a little bit bulky. They look industrial, don't they?
Yes, although maybe you'll appreciate still the bigger aperture, the greater separation and so on.
They need to have that size, but then you've got it in there.
Yes,
you've got smaller.
I guess it's good to have two ways of doing it. Yeah, well, three, right?
Wow. Well, so definitely an area to watch, John, for sure.
I think so. Oh, and by the way, on other photographic things, there's a new Harman film. Harman has in the name for Ilford, the traditional sort of black and white materials for analog photography maker. And they launched, as I was saying in episode two, a film called Phoenix, which is their first colour film. Which is, you need a lot more coatings in a colour film, and even their huge factory in Mobley in Cheshire didn't have enough capacity, but they're trying to make one. This is a new sort of very much their first feel into this in recent years, and I've got the results, but it's quite an unusual sort of colour.
So what did you think to them then?
I think they're quite distinctive.
When you're using words like distinctive, I don't know whether you actually like them or not.
A vintage shot of a Morris Minor. It looks rather beautiful.
And that's
Plasnewyd in Lachlan Gothlan, which I think on a moody day in the rain. I thought that was it suits the greenness of it quite well, I think. What do you all think?
But it's just what that was so like John Bentley. Like you what? It's like you doing an impersonation of you.
Oh gosh, right. Well, there were and that was a shop front in Ludlow. That was very nice. And
you're taking a shot of a butcher's in Ludlow.
There's a bit of Norman architecture.
John, they're very
yes. They're beautiful,
green.
John. Seriously.
There's a very green hue on all of them, isn't there?
Yes, there's a green and a sort of orangey red seems to be the themes. You don't actually get to get the full colour spectrum necessarily.
These are beautiful photographs, so you've really done that film justice. I love it. Right. The one on the Morris Minor, I'd have a print of that. It looks lovely.
Oh, right. I'll send you it. Yes.
That'd be great. Really, I think it's really, really beautiful.
Because you've used words like it's distinctive and there's that green.
Well, it is.
But do you like the images? Do you...
I'm a bit in two minds about it. Yeah. I think it suits certain subjects very well. I mean, I think the old picture inside the church of the old architecture, I think it suits very well. I think the car, it actually suits quite well.
But I think it does.
But then some of the things, it really doesn't, because you really want the more developed film.
I'd like to see you at something, and I'm being quite serious, something like a kind of themed festival where people are in costumes or something like that. I'd like to see it do a portrait. It'd be really interesting to see what it would do.
I have tried, I did do it. I haven't got them with me, but I did take a few shots of people. They're also quite distinctive, but I mean, they're very keen to point out this is almost a prototype film at the moment. There's a new generation's coming, but I think it does have sufficient individual characteristics that are sufficiently attractive that it's worth continuing the journey.
It's work in progress, and at the moment, it's very much suiting that retro feel.
It is, and I'm right. Sorry, I'm right. I'm remembering it was the first. It's their first foray into colour. Is that right?
I think for many, many years. Yes.
Yeah.
What else have you got in your case?
Ah, well, what else do I have in my case? Well, it's a light bulb, actually.
Oh, now, you mentioned this at the start of the show, which I have to say
we were left a little underwhelmed. Let's be honest.
A little, and it wasn't very inspiring,
but it's the best LED light bulb I've experienced for use in the home, because I think it actually is the first one. I think he's better than those, you know, the old-fashioned tungsten bulbs.
You're amazing. He's amazing, you know. I'm sold. But like, just the fact that John Bentley's just jumped up and down and said it's the best one for the home, that's it.
It's called the Sarah Vivid. The Sarah is an American company set up by a 2014 Nobel Prize winner called Shuji Nakamura, who actually basically developed the white LED. So he really knows what he's talking about. And what he's done was, I gave him an award once, but he already had a Nobel Prize.
I'm sure that that's been usurped by your award.
No, I don't think so. But the thing is, I mean, daylight is wonderful because it affects all colours. The whole colour spectrum that we can perceive is fully illuminated by daylight. And although they're actually considerably warmer in overall colour, those old-fashioned tungsten, rather inefficient light bulbs also did give us the full colour spectrum.
It was cosy. It's a warm feel.
Well, there's that, which is part... Which
and it affects your circadian rhythms. It has a biological effect on you when it's at the right...
There is that too, but I think what we got from a lot of the lower energy consumption light bulbs was a much reduced colour spectrum. They call it colour rendering in the lighting business, and they actually have a colour rendering index. So daylight is 100. Oh, those old tungsten bulbs are an index of 100.
Right.
But if you think of the worst thing, those sodium lights that we used to have for street lamps and things, they only had a CRI of about 30, because you could hardly perceive colours at all under that light. Now, those fiddly compact fluorescent things are about 70 or so on CRI. Most LED bulbs for the home are about 80 CRI, so it's somewhat lower. The exception is the bulbs that people use in shops, you know, that retailers use, and sometimes for photography and movies and the like, where you pay more, you get a CRI that's much closer to 100. You don't normally get them for the home. But what Sarah have done is they've changed the constitution of the various semiconductors in the LED, and particularly they've got more gallium nitride in there, and that actually gives you more red light coming out, because it's red that's
gallium nitride. Sounds like one of the Knights of the Round Table, doesn't it?
Ooh.
It does a bit.
Yeah. I mean, this is the content that you didn't know you needed about light bulbs. I have to say, John, we are enthralled
We're
by
sold.
This. Seriously.
They're not that popular at the moment. I mean...
They will be after this.
Yeah,
no,
will
no,
be.
No, but there are reasons for this. I mean, I think one is all the numbering surround all this is quite difficult, this CRI business.
No one likes numbers.
Nobody likes all those numbers. And also, it's not the only number involved, because you can get things with a high CRI, but where they still have a weak red. So you've also got the sort of... you've also got the red CRI number. And there's now a new standard come out... For it takes count of even more colours to make sure you're even more accurately describing how good these bulbs are. And that's a TM30.
And
but we won't go into that.
Where does that sit on the TM30?
I don't know.
I'm going to say actually, this is ever so complicated, isn't it?
It's fascinating.
Currently quite expensive. I mean, there's £48.
For one light bulb?
For one light bulb. But on the other hand, it still lasts, you know, tens of thousands of hours. So I suppose in many ways, compared to the tungsten bulbs, which you have to replace every 1,000 hours, maybe...
And do you get bayonet and screw? And
yeah,
screw?
Yes, well, you can get both of those. I find the adapters are quite useful if you want to. But it's not quite... It's actually not quite the same as the tungsten light. It's different. But I think it's actually better.
Does it make you feel different?
I think it makes you feel different because I think your brain is subtly aware that you're not seeing all those colours.
I agree. This is what I was trying to get to at the beginning. And obviously I don't know the science of it, but it does affect your biology, doesn't it? Light has a profound effect on us. That's why looking at phones before you go to bed is not a very good idea.
Yes,
and also the first thing you should do in the morning is stick your head out of a window, ideally if it's open, or go outside and stand on the floor and be immersed in daylight.
In my pants?
Yeah, well, whatever you're wearing. But it sets you perfectly for the day to have that light. So you stay inside all day, it messes with your whole...
Ujima flop.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, your circadian rhythms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, I think it's nice to see all the colours as daylight intended. So it's expensive here, but in America, there's more of a market for these sort of things. You can actually get them at a lower price in Walmart and places like that. So
that's
become more of the mainstream. They also do a low blue light as well, although that's...
It's very elegant as well. I like the matte white bottom section with a nice sort of chrome screw-in area and then a dull sort of, what would you call that, like a off-white...
You're making this sound
top
sexy.
Section. Yeah, it looks like a normal light bulb.
I mean, it does.
I just wanted to pick it up a bit.
I wouldn't know the difference by looking at it.
No.
Beautiful. £48, that.
£48, but...
But if you say it's the best light bulb...
I think they'll come down in price, yeah.
Yeah. John, what's it called?
The Syrah, with two A's, Vivid.
Bang on, mate. Enlightening.
Come on. Very good.
Oh, light bulb moment right there.
So, John, have you got any gadgets that are maybe too big for your briefcase?
Well, one thing does come to mind. I did have a brief drive, it was a quite brief one, in a Hyundai Ioniq 5N, which is the sporting version of their sort of largish family electric car.
Right.
And it was very good to drive, handled very well. I mean, some of these sporting electric cars are amazingly powerful. I mean, it's a 3.4 seconds to 6, it's got over 600 horsepower. Though one thing that struck me as really interesting about it is it's an electric car that pretends to sound, or does try and sound, as though it has a conventional internal combustion engine and an 8-speed flappy paddle gearbox. And as well as it gives you a choice of sound, you can have different supersonic versions or more ordinary engine sounds. And it really tries to try and convince you that you've actually got a real engine in there.
It's so interesting.
You hit rev limiters if you hold on to a low gear. Yes. You get that increasing sense of acceleration as the revs rise.
As the tone changes. And this isn't just, is this internal only, or does it go to the outside so pedestrians can hear?
I imagine it might be something different on the outside. I think it's mainly directed towards the inside. It begs the broader question, what should an electric car sound like?
This is a fascinating question. Because I live in a town that gets very, very full of tourists in the summer. And, of course, they're not local, so they just walk on the roads. And if I pop to Sainsbury's in my electric car, it's got a little Renault thing, I have to be ever so careful because they just won't hear me. My car puts out virtually no noise at all. It's got a little hum. Mm. But I've always felt it's a little unsafe. Not even mentioning the lack of sensory... feedback, which is what you're talking about, which I think would be quite nice. It is interesting, though. What is the sound?
So what did it feel like to drive that?
It felt quite convincing, not entirely, but it also, because you can mess about with it and change the motions of the settings, it's also quite entertaining. So it's a new. What, I think one would want to try it for long to see whether you got fed up with it and just forgot it, or whether it's a
novel thing.
Yes, or whether just a novelty, or whether.
Can you switch it off if you don't like
yes,
it?
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. Mm.
There is another thing. We do suffer from quite a lot of noise pollution, don't we, when we live in towns and cities.
But I like a bit of noise in the car.
Absolutely.
This is right up my street. I think I would like that.
But it's an opportunity, isn't it, though, to say what is the right amount of noise for safety and sensory feedback for the driver, safety for the pedestrian, but without that throbbing diesel sound that seems to penetrate through the house and become uncomfortable sometimes.
No, but I like that.
You like a bit of throbbing...
sound. That's what I've kind of grown up with. So I like that noise. I mean, look at my job.
Oh my God, you're
that's
on the.
That's why I'm so deaf.
On the pit lane.
Yeah exactly. I love that. I love it when you can feel the noise when it vibrates. And no, it's not healthy, but I still like it.
Interesting. So do you think we're going to go that way? Because I tested the Harley Davidson electric motorbike.
Yeah.
And to my amazement, it made no sound at all, apart from the sort of rubber on the road. And this is a high performance, very large, very heavy motorbike, right? And I thought to myself, well, if I was Harley, I'd be talking to some really cool composer about doing maybe downloadable sound packs that maybe you even have to purchase for quite a lot of money. It would be a revenue potential.
Yes, BMW have worked with Hans Zimmer on sound for cars, and I'm sure that's not the only example of that.
So maybe it's going to be a thing?
I think so. I think that is a thing, definitely.
Definitely something to watch for the future.
Mm. Nice.
Oh, John, it's been great having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming in. And you're welcome, as you know, anytime.
With your pelly case.
And your light bulbs.
Ooh. And your little snouty, pig snouty
lenses. And your noisy
lenses.
Cars. Oh, thank you.
Yes, bring
and
them
And your silver fox good looks.
Oh, we love you, John Bentley. Ladies and gentlemen.
We've got a button for you, mate.
Oh, yeah, here we go. John Bentley!
Woo! Well done, dude. Well done, Johnny boy.
Hello. What are you doing? What is that noise?
Oh, mate. Honestly, this is absolutely brilliant. One of the things that I love about the Gadget Show podcast is I'm not actually playing this on demo mode. It just looks like I am. I'm playing a game of Quake 2. What I love about the show is that sometimes a bit of tech pops up that I've never even heard of. And this is it. It's the Panasonic Sound Slayer.
Yeah.
All right? And for those of you listening, I'm wearing it round my neck. Like a, what, how would
it
you describe
it? It looks like a upside, well, it's like a horseshoe, isn't
like
it?
Like a horseshoe around my neck.
It's like a sort of deflated travel neck rest.
Like those neck
it?
Things you have when you go on an aeroplane, yeah. And as you can probably hear, it gives you, and I'm going to say, a very convincing surround sound experience, which I've just reduced the volume of a little bit.
And if you could reduce it a bit more.
Thank you. With me. How's that?
That's so much better.
Okay. Yeah. It gives you a very immersive surround sound experience in this Quake 2, which is what I'm playing right now. I chose the old school Quake 2 from ID Software because it's a very noisy game. But it's brilliant. And it also incorporates a microphone. So I could get on Discord, for example, and have conversations. Or I'm guessing I could probably do some kind of meeting on it, but I think that would be a little bit pointless. The idea is that it's very emotive.
You might be a bit distracted if that's going on in your meeting.
I think there might be. Do you think they'd know if I sat on a train with this on?
For
sure. Would my fellow passengers notice?
I think they would be very angry.
So it comes with software that enables you to do a bit of jiggery-pokery and to adjust the angle of the surround sound, things like that. But the truth is, I didn't even bother. I just plugged it in via USB, and it instantly configured automatically. The first game I put on it started working like that. It's brilliant.
So this has been designed essentially by gamers for gamers, really.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, fair play Panasonic, because I'm going to be honest with you, been there, done it with most gaming peripherals. This is, it's not a brand new idea, but it's a relatively new concept. It's a spin on, you know, either fully immersive headphones, which is what I normally use, and or speakers orientated on your gaming desktop. I love this. I feel free and I can talk to you with a reasonable level of volume, but were you not there and I turned it up, I'd be in the world of Quake right now.
And I suppose in a way, not having headphones on for long periods of time is also good, isn't it?
Yes, I'm terrible. I get in trouble at home because I keep my AirPods in my ears.
I know you do.
All the time.
I'm just
I forget they're even in there.
Most people that don't want to wear headphones all day.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's probably a more healthy solution. And but from what I mean, I need to play a lot of games in my home setup. Clearly, I'm not there right now. Before I could give you the final verdict, but I've spent half an hour, 20 minutes playing with this. My immediate response, you could see by the excitement in my face, you could hear it in my voice. This is really good. It's emotional. I feel enveloped in the action.
So positives and negatives. Obviously, it's very mobile.
Very mobile. This particular variant plugs in via USB. I don't mind the fact that it plugs in. I don't mind the odd cable. There is a wireless version. It's just that this one is 130 quid, I think, and the wireless variant is around £300. So you're paying a lot more for that. And it's got a little box that plugs into your computer. I think it uses 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi. I haven't used that one. But there is a wireless option there. The issue with the wireless option, though, I've heard, is the potential for latency. This I don't detect any latency in this. I've played three different games on it, and I haven't detected any latency. So, you know, this is good enough for me. 130 quid is comparable to a fairly decent set of speakers. Maybe that would be a better option for some people. I like the novelty of it. I think it's quite interesting. I like it when companies get out there and they try something different. And the build quality is nice. It feels rather comfortable. It's got fabric on the top. So if you rub your chin against it, it doesn't feel horrible. It's not rubbery or anything. And the sound quality is great. I mean, listen to that, Suze.
Do you get any vibration from it?
A little bit of tactile sort of sensory feedback, but nothing remarkable. I would just say that I just don't even want to chat. I want to listen to it. It's really immersive, Susie. Can you hear that?
Yes. I think you need to be the one in it.
I can't hear what you're saying. Could you use sign language, please?
Can we end the show, please? I've got to go and open a fate and do a tombola thing tonight. In Middle Earth in Wolverhampton.
You go and open your fate. I'll be here playing Quake 2.
Okay.
Come and get me when there's some free sandwiches.
We very much hope that you've enjoyed this week's podcast.
Oh, look at that!
No. No one's looking at that. Off. Switch it off, please. We need to close down the podcast. Can you switch it off?
Switch it off. I thought you said something else.
Yeah. That's what I meant.
There we go.
Marvellous.
No, in all seriousness, Susie Perry, it's been lovely.
It's been very special.
It's been great. And having John here made it even better, didn't it?
Always. Yeah, always good. And we hope that you've enjoyed listening to the podcast. And obviously you get all the extra bits if you go to our Patreon page.
Yeah, go across to our Patreon page where you get exclusive behind-the-scenes footage. You can ask us all kinds of questions. There are all kinds of different tiers that you can sign up for.
And like all and bloopers, there's loads of those.
Yeah, the bloopers.
Even more.
The bloopers are the best thing. So yeah, and it's really important because the community is growing. Be part of the family.
Yeah, we would love that. But until the next time, we bid you farewell.
Ta-ra a bit.
See ya. What?
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.